Legends, the greatest social casino experience has arrived at Legends.com. With thousands of the best free-to-play casino-style games, chances to earn millions of bonus coins and win real money. Legends is revolutionizing the Vegas experience wherever you are. If you love winning, then you'll love playing at Legends.com. Legends is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Play responsibly. Visit Legends.com for more information. Legends with a Z.com is legendary fun.
In 2015, in Broken Arrow, Oklahoma, police were called to a home following reports that a brother was attacking his family. When officers arrived, they were met with a scene of utter carnage, carried out by two teenage siblings obsessed with serial killers and mass murderers. It would turn out to be the worst criminal event in a community's history. A case of familicide that saw almost an entire family butchered. This is what happens when twisted fantasy becomes deadly reality. These are the Broken Arrow murders. I'm Emma Kenny. Welcome to Bang to Rights, the deep dive crime podcast, which takes you through some of the most heinous crimes the world has ever seen. Today's case is one where I've watched all the interrogations that are available. I have thought about covering it before, but I'm always on the fence a little bit when it comes down to these kind of cases, just because I want to be sympathetic to some of the research that talks about avoiding discussing people who are spree killers, for example. And even though this doesn't fit that category, there are elements of that. And certainly I would never want to contribute towards certain malevolent individuals feeling inspired by certain content. But after a long think about this, I also believe that there are so many interesting and intriguing elements to this case that I did want to cover it. And I wanted to dig as deep as I could to figure out what happens in the heads of some young people when they're growing up that defines a future and incredibly ends a future for so many people. So hopefully today, even if you know the Broken Arrow murders, you're going to come away with a little bit more knowledge about them. I will have done my job if that is the case. So in 2015, we've got 18-year-old Robert Bever and his brother, 16-year-old Michael Bever. Now, they're living with a family, and I would say when you look at their home, it was relatively luxurious. It was a nice home to live. They're being brought up in Broken Arrow in Tulsa County, which is in Oklahoma. They're growing up with their mum and dad, so 44-year-old April and 52-year-old David. Also, there were siblings, 13-year-old Crystal, 12-year-old Daniel, 10-year-old Christopher, and 4-year-old Victoria, as well as 2-year-old Autumn. So quite a lot of siblings being brought up, and essentially, like I said, they're living in a nice environment. Not that that means that things are perfect. We're all very aware on this channel that you can have a beautiful home and everything can look in order, but actually there can be chaos behind the scenes. But nonetheless, to all intents and purposes, the family is a close family. Now, it seems that one of the significant differences between them and, shall we say, typical families is they really did live a relatively isolated life. So April didn't work, and instead she kind of devoted herself with respect to the children. So she stayed at home and she home educated the children. But a part of this is problematic in this case because the children genuinely were not socialized. So a lot of people choose to home educate their children. More and more, I genuinely see so many benefits of doing that if you have the opportunity, just because of the devotion and dedication. And also because a lot of people these days worry that certain things being taught in schools are actually not the way they want to bring their children up. But I would always say that a child who's being home educated also needs to have lots of socialization opportunities, making sure that you're involved with a home education network so your child can form great peer relationships and understand what it's like to form and forge rules that children have between one another and test out conflict. All of these things are just so important when a child is growing up. But it isn't the case in this family. So the children just didn't have an opportunity to mix with their peers. And I mean, they took it to a great extreme. They weren't even allowed to play with other kids in the neighborhood. And growing up, it's said that they literally had no friends. Now, I appreciate they had each other, And I appreciate that close bonds in families are really integral and important, but you need it diluted. Every child needs to be able to form alliances and relationships with people who are not blood related to them, because everybody's life is different and you bring a whole host of different experiences, identities, thought processes, views, opinions into relationships. If you don't allow your children to have those relational experiences, it's going to cause them certain issues because they're not developing in a typical context. Robert and Michael, those particular brothers, they shared a room. And bear in mind, they don't have anybody else essentially to really talk to apart from their siblings, and they are the elder siblings. So of course they start to connect in ways that they have common interests over. And they start to talk about the fact that they really enjoy serial killings. They like looking at mass murderers. They're excited. And essentially, they had an unhealthy interest in this area. And I'm saying that specifically because, of course, you guys are listening to me talk about these issues. I make content about this, but none of us have an unhealthy interest in it. We actually are intrigued by the area and want to know more. We're not excited or titillated by it. There's no voyeurism involved, but it's different. These boys, in their very pivotal developing early adolescence onwards, are kind of fixated by this area because it excites them. And they have a real connection with the 1999 Columbine shooting. So that was a school shooting, 15 people died, and that includes the deaths of the shooters themselves. So they are looking at these in almost a hero worship context. And another thing that seems to be developing in parallel with this particular interest is a real unhealthy resentment towards their parents. Now, their sister, she would later say, you know, there were some reasons for a level of resentment. So their father could be quite physical with them. Also, he was known to be very verbally abusive at times. And she had actually witnessed him throw the brothers across the room when he was angry. She'd actually also witnessed her mother being treated that way. In fact, she'd watched her mum be thrown across the room by her father, and she'd actually been caused to hit her head against the wall. And we can agree that that is completely unacceptable. There will be lots of people watching this who've had violence in their childhoods. You don't deserve it. It was never your fault. But you won't have turned into killers, because actually it's probably something that's going to make you more empathic because you know the agony and pain of being treated in that way. But certainly we can't avoid the fact that that would be classed as domestic abuse. And to witness domestic abuse is traumatic for kids. It affects their stability, their foundations. It creates fractures in their foundations. And if we're thinking about resentment, when you're dealing with a bigger individual with more power in your world, in this case, their father, it can be very challenging when you can't fight back in an ordinary way because physically they're going to dominate you. Now, she also said that she'd heard her parents even talk about the fact that they were too rough with Robert and Michael, particularly when they were younger. And this demonstrates an understanding that as parents, they had maybe treated them inappropriately at times. And I guess that when you think about your first children, everyone goes through a period of adaptation to being a parent, and that adaptation can be readapted throughout the time that you were parents bringing your children up at home, and you can get, shall we say, more relaxed with every new birth. But essentially for April and David, they obviously had some conscience about the way that they treated the boys when they were little, and no doubt as they grew into the kind of individuals we're going to talk about today. Now, another thing about April and David is they were highly religious. And that's not to say for one minute that being highly religious leads you down a path of being violent in any context. Obviously, for the vast amount of people who are highly religious, conscience is very important, morals are very important, forgiveness is very important, and of course, treating people as you would wish to be treated yourself is very important. But there are certain sects or orthodoxies of Christianity, and the same in any religion, where certain legitimacy to violence, for example, is allowed because of certain things that are written in the Bible, for example. And the problem with being highly religious in that context is there is a bit of leverage to treat people in a way that you maybe shouldn't. And one of the things that they do is they talk about Armageddon as retribution for literally everything that they hated about the world. And I do appreciate everyone has a right to whatever their beliefs are. And ideally, as long as it's not causing any harm for anybody else, we should stay out of people's business, their right to religious beliefs. That should be something that's respected. But if you're bringing up children and making them feel a level of disrespect towards people in the world around you, if you're bringing up with the idea that this is literally an experience that could turn into an apocalyptic event where the whole of the world could be destroyed through Armageddon, I wonder how that impacts on the developing brain and on the sense of security within the world and in the sense of potential futility of life. You know, if it's all gonna come to an end in the most terrible and tragic of ways, how is that gonna impact on the developing Robert and Michael? Especially when you think that Robert and Michael start to become quite fixated with killing. I mean, to anybody who's killed in a spree killing or in a school shooting spree killing, it is Armageddon in that moment for those individuals. Now, clearly, these boys are looking for some kind of role models, and we can do that positively. We can do that very negatively. And in this case, it's definitely going down the road of negative role models. So these killers that they're feeling more and more inspired and obsessed with, they start to think, well, maybe we could do it. Maybe we could formulate a plan so terrible, so incredibly malevolent that we'll be known, that people will remember our names. And they decide that they're going to kill the family. Now, it turns out that Robert, he's the one who's first come up with the idea. And at the time that he starts to talk about this idea, he'd actually been thinking about it for 3 years. And now he's openly discussing this with Michael. Michael's decided that he's going to join him. And it's not a spur of the moment. Not that that would legitimize or minimize in any way the actions. But there is nothing random about this sudden decision. There is nothing immediate about this malevolent plan. No, they plan it for a year. They have a whole year to get to the point where they think to themselves, this is crazy. We definitely don't need to do this. A whole year of living with the people they intend to execute. And bear in mind, some of these are very young children, children who could not in any way, shape or form cause any conflict with the brothers to create this kind of mindset where they would be deserving, even in the warped minds of Robert and Michael, to go ahead and murder them. And the planning is not just about discussing it and considering options for actually going through with the murders, no. Robert goes and gets a job at a call center so that he can raise cash for the equipment that he would need. So this is ultimately a well thought out plan, and now it's being given the opportunity to rise into reality because they're injecting money into the situation. And he actually subsequently purchased body armor, helmets, guns, ammo. He purchased an array of knives, and they had this plan to also make videos of the massacre. So they wanted to take one video which was going to show the bodies for the police, and another one not showing the bodies that was going to be uploaded online for the public. So they even were considering what would be appropriate online. Obviously, content on the internet's likely going to be taken down if it's showing the annihilation of a family and there are bodies present. So they're going to make a public viewing video, and then they're obviously going to let the police see the actual bodies within the videos that they take so that they have a better view of what's played out. So they really are considering all options of how to get their message across. They want people to see and bear witness to this. And the boys didn't just plan to kill their family members. This isn't just about family annihilation. No, That's not enough. Because clearly, these individuals want everybody to have their name stained on their conscience. They want to do something so tragic, traumatic, diabolical, loss-inducing that essentially
Legends, the greatest social casino experience has arrived at Legends.com. With thousands of the best free-to-play casino-style games, chances to earn millions of bonus coins and win real money. Legends is revolutionizing the Vegas experience wherever you are. If you love winning, then you'll love playing at Legends.com. Legends is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Play responsibly. Visit Legends.com for more information. Legends with a Z.com is legendary fun.
Everyone will remember their names. Robert had illegally purchased two pistols, a shotgun, ammunition. All of this was delivered from online. And he was clever enough to know that he didn't want them brought to the house. Because obviously, if your parents see that you're having lots of ammunition and guns brought to the house, it's going to start sparking their imagination. So instead, he had them delivered to a local gun shop. Now, when Robert was asked about why he connected with guns, he said, listen, I really like them. And one of the main reasons why I really like them is because my parents hated them. And again, like I said, his parents may have had problems with corporal punishment. Certainly there was some domestic abuse, according to his sister. But the fact that they hate guns demonstrates that they're not some pistol-toting parents who just want to flaunt the reality of the amendment that allows them to bear arms. That's not who we're talking about. And in fact, they obviously saw them as weapons of destruction. And Robert likes the fact that he doesn't have that particular belief system. He's quite the contrary. He really enjoys the idea of having that power. So aside from the fact that they're going to go ahead and murder, in their minds, their entire family, they're also planning a murder spree. They want to become famous mass serial killers. They wanted to kill as many people as possible. They wanted to shoot up schools. They wanted to shoot up restaurants. They wanted to go to movie theatres and do it. And you can see that that's because there are a certain amount of people who will attend there at one point. You know, that's why spree killers go to those places, because they know there will be a large amount of individuals present and that can do the most destruction possible. And their main hope, which is both bizarre, tragic, troubling, and terrifying, is that they wanted to become as famous as Columbine shooters Dylan Klebold and Eric Harris. That was their main intention. So they had fixated and obsessed over these, and now they wanted to be essentially bigger than who they are. They wanted to usurp the memory of those killers, replacing themselves at the helm of that particular mindset and action. Now, after killing the family, they were going to plan to cut up the bodies. They decided they were going to store them in tubs in the attic. Then they were going to clean the house, ideally take the family car, pick the guns up from the gun shop, and then they were going to travel northwest to Washington State. So they've really considered how to create some distance between what's going on at the family home and where they want to eventually arrive. And part of that will be to do with the fact that they'll both be aware that if people sense that the family are not present, if they're in the house or looking around the house, maybe there's a welfare check goes on, they don't want it to be obvious that some kind of heinous murder has occurred. So if they cut the bodies up and put them in storage and hide them, and then they clean the environment up, then hopefully it's going to give them some space and time. Now, obviously, we all know that if you do that, there is probably going to be a horrendous stench not long afterwards. But again, how much socialization was this family doing? They probably would have a relatively good lead time where they could get on with removing themselves from the situation and escaping, because people wouldn't ultimately be checking on that family very often. So they've really considered how to get away with this and do the most damage. And the whole premise is, when they're traveling northwest to Washington State, they're going to be stopping so that they can commit random killings again and again. And they even have this number where they say to themselves, they're going to ideally kill 5 people at each stop using Molotov cocktails, genuinely. So basically using petrol bombs. And they just had this idea, not that they weren't going to be caught, because I think that They were always absolutely aware that they were not going to get away with this in the long term. It was about knowing that they'd left that trail of carnage in their wake. And their main aim was to kill at least 50 and to ideally become infamous. And they actually believed that they could kill at least 100. And their logic was that they felt that if they killed 100, no one would likely miss them. They felt that there was just too many people in the world. And that, again, gives them this permission base. Oh, well, at the end of the day, there's loads of people in the world, probably too many. What damage are we really doing killing 100 people? And you can just see how illogical that reality is when you think about one human being being infinitely meaningful to the people who love them and the pain and trauma that that one person causes when their life is cut short in this kind of way. And yet these boys are just seeing them as objects, like skittles. Just knock them down. At the end of the day, there's always going to be more coming. No conscience or consequence or understanding of the meaning of human beings in this world. So whilst they had initially planned to do this in the September, because this ammunition was being delivered, they decided that they were going to kill the family the night before the ammunition arrived. That's on the 22nd of July, 2015. Now, tragically, and it is utterly tragic, really, because this demonstrates just how prone to bias we are with the people that we love and know. It's very difficult for us to wrap around our heads the idea that somebody we love could want to kill us. So Crystal has actually overheard them talking about their serial killer obsession. She's actually been witness to their talk and she's worried about what they were saying. She even heard them talking about the plans that they had to kill the family and to steal their money. I mean, you can't even begin to comprehend how terrifying that must be for a kid. You know, we all have relationships with our family members that can be problematic from time to time. We've all been in situations of sibling exchanges of conflict. I love my brother, I love my sister, but there have been moments in time where certainly we have fallen out because we had very different views. But that's a normal experience and exchange in a loving family. And actually it's testament to what makes families, because you kind of go through these fallouts and then make up and you realize that you just wouldn't not want to have those people in your world. But if I had been a kid and I was like walking past my sister's room, who's 4 years older than me, and she's sat with somebody going like, yeah, I'm just gonna like murder my family and this is how I'm gonna do it, I would have been totally blindsided. And believe me, I would have taken it seriously. And Crystal actually does. So bear this in mind. She isn't listening to that and feeling safe. She's thinking, this is weird. She is a typical mindset. So she is realizing, I don't like what they are saying and it concerns me enough to go and tell my mum. But April, because of these biases that we all have lots of times to our family members, April just says to Crystal, boys will be boys. No, April, that's not what boys are like. Yeah, boys will be boys at times. They'll be rough and tumble. They'll get into scrips and scrapes. There'll be situations where you send them out very clean and then they'll come back 15 minutes later looking like they actively looked for a dirty puddle to just lie in and soak up completely before getting, I don't know, soil and just wiping it all over their face and hair. Boys will be boys in that way, as girls will be girls in that way. But at the end of the day, we don't expect boys to be chatting about murdering their family. In fact, I would leverage a real guess that everybody watching this right now who's got lads or girls as kids and has heard them talk about things, none of you have heard them thinking or talking out loud about killing you. It's just not typical. And if a child was speaking like that, that is something resonant of serial killers. That is something that we expect to see as a hallmark of a child growing up to develop into one of these human predators, because they have atypical thinking processes. And because of that, they're quite happy to talk about it, even when it's demonstrating absolute malevolence and dysfunction. And Crystal really struggles, but April is reassuring her. And April had even seen Robert wearing his body armor and she just laughed, because April cannot for 1 minute stretch her mind to believe that Robert is somebody capable of what we're going to talk about today. Because a mother's love, and a mother's love will be imperfect. April will have made mistakes. But clearly she did love her children. She loved them enough to believe the best in them. And that sometimes is the biggest chink in our armor, that we can look at somebody and see their atypical behavior and note that there is something odd about the way they are acting, and yet we can still buy into a bias that they would never do anything to harm us. Let's be honest, it's why domestic homicide plays out, because a partner will often not believe that somebody is capable of actually murdering them, but they are. Also, to some degree, April's way of bringing up her boys and her family has kind of worked against her, because she hasn't got peers to compare them with. She can't see that the way that they're exchanging information, the way that they're talking, the way that they're dressing, the way that they're fixating on certain particular interests is not the same as other kids, because they're not having the social interaction. And like I said, the idea of boys will be boys, it's completely out of context. That is not what boys are like at all. Yes, in early childhood, we would expect them to pick up sticks. We would expect them to create weapons from anything. And you know what? We can do all the gender neutrality that we want in the world. But let me tell you, if you've brought up boys when they're very young, very early on, they are going to pick things up to fight with for fun. It's just something to do with the brains of many children who are male. And you can see that they like to dress up. My own son, who's my youngest son, literally had every type of combat outfit, equipment, etc., that was for play when he was a child. He grew out of it by the age of 9 or 10. That's normal, because it was play acting. If he was walking around now in body armor or had a penchant for particular weapons, I'd be really worried about him, because it just doesn't feel contextual in comparison to friends. Now, bear in mind, there's two of them. So we've got Robert and Michael. So neither of them are satiating the other's desire. In fact, they're pumping it psychologically. They're permission basing it. And this is, again, further problematic behavior, because there's no trip switch. There's no off. There's no breaking down this fantasy and saying, look, this is ridiculous. We really need to chill and not even consider going through with this. Instead, because they are analysing it so much and they're considering how they're going to get away with it and how they're going to actually manufacture the possibilities to act in this way, they're almost at a point where they're considering the family's deaths to be surgical executions. They know exactly how it's going to play out in their head. Bear in mind, what you think is going to play out when you kill someone versus the actuality of the event are a billion miles apart. But in their heads, they've got it all planned. So they're going to wait till everybody's in bed and then essentially going to take them outside one by one to execute them. But of course, like I said, the problem with human beings, and I've talked about this again and again in my videos, is we are unpredictable. And the idea that it's easy to kill somebody is so left field in comparison to the truth, it doesn't even register. And because of this, in spite of all of this planning, in spite of that surgical approach to the way they're going to play this killings out, it's not going to work out that way. In fact, it's going to become a brutal, terrifying, prolonged bloodbath. That's the only way I can describe it. So we get to the night of the 22nd of July, 2015. It's about 11:30 p.m. in the evening. All the family at this point are in bed, aside from Robert and Michael. Also their sister, Crystal, and their mother, April, are up as well. Now the boys are up in their room because, of course, this moment in time they've been waiting for. This is all about them being prepped and ready. They want to execute their plan, and they actually want to execute their family. So they get themselves prepared. They lay out this large collection of knives, put them out on the bed, and they start to get themselves dressed, putting on the body armor. Because obviously they're thinking to themselves, they don't want anybody to be able to attack them back. But through this process, their preparations end up getting disturbed because their mum actually says to Crystal, who's 13 at the time, go and get the boys downstairs to do the washing up. So she's aware that they're up and she obviously wants them to finish the chores. Crystal, of course, obliges, just goes upstairs. It's a normal evening for her. Asks the brothers to actually get downstairs and do what mum's saying. And when she walks into the room, she's not really fazed initially, because even though there's an array of weapons and they're sat there in the body armor, she's seen the knife collection before. And she's seen them walking around and trying on the armor before. So it's not too atypical, but wow. Not in her worst nightmares could she have imagined what they actually had in mind. So as she comes in and kind of says to them, "Mum, what's you downstairs?" Michael, who's sat at his computer, just calmly turns to Robert and says, "Should we do it right now?" And Robert just replied in the affirmative. Now, obviously, Crystal's not going to have any idea what's going on. All she knows is they've had this exchange, and then Michael basically says to Crystal, "Can you just look at something on my laptop?" So, of course, she turns her back on Robert and she looks down at the screen. And that's when Robert approaches her from behind. He covers her mouth, he takes a knife and he slits her throat. But as opposed to this being the easy execution that they'd envisaged, it wasn't going to be. You know, their whole plan was that they were going to kill her quickly and then they were going to hide her body in the closet, that one by one method. But Crystal is not going down without a fight. She falls to the floor in absolute shock and then she begins to scream. She begins to fight back. She doesn't comply with what they want. And then Robert just continually starts to stab her, just frenzied in his actions. And that little 13-year-old girl is just taken from a living situation that is normal in her home to the most unfamiliar, terrifying moment that she'll have ever endured. Obviously, her mother hears her screams, and those screams will be ones that are terrified. And as any parent knows, if you hear a child screaming in that way, you know something terrible is playing out. So she immediately comes to see what's happening. She sees her daughter being attacked by Robert, and then she screams for her husband. She screams for somebody to call the police. All she can think about in that moment is how she's going to protect the child. And all she can do in that moment is try to register what is playing out in front of her own eyes. Her two boys are trying to murder her daughter. Now, Crystal, who is incredible, she's obviously realizing, "I need to escape, I need to get away." She manages to get to her feet in spite of the fact that she's bleeding out, in spite of the fact she's been repeatedly stabbed, and she just runs. And she runs from that room screaming at the rest of the family to hide. And I think it is unbelievable that Crystal has not just the internal strength to not give up. Because in that circumstance, many people just freeze. But not this kid. She's 13. And she's like, "Not only am I going to try to escape my potential killers, I am going to try to protect my family." She screams at them to hide. That's unbelievable. The fact that she is in that moment of great distress, thinking of other people that she loves, it makes Crystal unique in so many ways. She runs towards the door and she hears her mother screaming because her mother is being stabbed in the neck by Robert. And then Michael and Robert runs after her. Can't even begin to imagine the distress she was feeling. Can't even imagine the horror and the fact that she knows that two people that she loves are chasing her down to execute her. She's already badly injured. The fear that must have been bleeding through her veins is incomprehensible. And Crystal doesn't just warn her family, doesn't just try to escape. That kid grabs a phone. She rings 911. She runs from the house and it actually triggers the house alarm. But unfortunately, bear in mind, her brothers aren't injured and so they're right behind her. And then Michael's able to disable the house alarm before it even goes off. And she doesn't get very far. Of course she doesn't. She's been so badly injured. And then she collapses on the front lawn. Robert gets the phone, smashes it, drags her back to the house and leaves her outside the front door. You can't even begin to comprehend a child of 13 enduring this horror movie reality. Now, meanwhile, Michael's actually resumed the attack on the mother because it's not easy to kill somebody. It's not this simple idea they've created in their mind. It's turning out to be more messy, more brutal, more protracted than they could have ever envisaged. And she's fighting back. Can you imagine fighting off your own children? as they're literally trying to snuff your life out.
Your night in just got legendary. Get ready to chase the rush, spin, win, and redeem instantly straight to your bank account at legendswithaz.com. With free-to-play slots, blackjack, keno, roulette, and more, experience all the thrills of Vegas without leaving your couch. Legends has it all.
Legends is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Must be 18 plus. Play responsibly. Visit legends.com for full details.
Get in the game now and score a 50% bonus on your first purchase only at legendswithaz.com.
April put up a really fierce struggle. She ended up getting stabbed 48 times. She was stabbed in her arms, her face, her neck, her chest, her body. Then after they've left the mother for dead, Robert tells Michael to bring Crystal inside. So this is clear thinking of these boys. They're not traumatized. They're not realizing the error of their ways. They are continuing it. They are continuing the error of those ways. They've already injured Crystal beyond belief. And now it's get her back in. She actually awoke to find herself being dragged back into the house by Michael. And all the while that this is happening, while she's being dragged back, as far as she is concerned, to her death, all she can hear are the screams of her younger siblings. The siblings that she'd warned to hide. The siblings that she'd tried to protect. Now, at some point, their father emerges from the bedroom. Obviously, there is so much noise, he's probably alerted to the reality that something horrible is kicking off. Now, the original plan, as far as the boys were concerned, was that Michael was going to shoot him with a crossbow whilst he was sleeping. So a very macabre way of killing somebody. And also, is that a sign of some kind of internal resentment? He wants to kill him in the most horrific of ways. But because all of this is playing out and everything has gone wrong, you know, this isn't the smooth sailing the boys had imagined, this plan's been totally abandoned. So David goes downstairs and of course, wow, imagine what is playing out in front of this man's eyes. His sons executing his family members. So he just charges at Robert. Now, David is a bigger guy and Robert at first thought he was going to get overpowered, but bear in mind, he's got weapons and he manages to stab his father multiple times in the chest. And you have to imagine, no matter how big and strong you are, if you run towards somebody, usually you're open because that's your main objective, is to get to the person to overpower them. Often you'll use your hands to try to grab them. And the problem with that is, yes, if you get there and you disturb them when they're not prepared for it, you might have a chance. But if it comes down to them being armed, you are literally leaving the whole space, the whole area, which is vulnerable, which is your chest, open to that person. And of course, Robert uses that advantage and he just stabs him again and again. And the minute that somebody stabs you in that area, it's an instant shock. Yes, the adrenaline kicks in. You're not necessarily going to feel the pain, but the impact on the vital organs that are affected is going to be instantaneous. That knowledge, something terrible has happened to my body. And David is stabbed multiple times, takes his last breaths as he asks his son, "Why are you doing this?" And Robert replied, "Because I must." His father's last words were, "No, you don't." The last words he spoke, trying to will his child to realise he didn't need to do it. Now, whilst all this was happening, all this horror is playing out, 12-year-old Daniel, one of their younger siblings, he'd locked himself in his bedroom. He'd done what Crystal had advised. And from there, he'd actually called 911 on Michael's phone. He told his dispatcher that his brother was attacking his family, even gave him the address. Again, isn't it incredible? In that fear, in that horror, he's thinking about how to do the right thing to protect himself and those he loves. Now, the person who's on the phone to him can actually hear screams in the background and then a struggle. Then the line goes dead. The call handler tries the landline again, obviously knowing that something horrendous is playing out, but they can't connect back to it.
911. Broken Arrow 911. Hello?
Hello.
Hi, where are you at?
Broken Arrow, Oklahoma, 7411.
What address?
709 Magnolia Court.
Okay. Are you the only one there?
No. My brother's attacking my family.
Your dad is attacking your family?
No, my brother. He has an idea of killing me.
Okay, who's attacking your family?
What?
Who's attacking your family?
Yes.
Who is it? Do they? Are you there?
Hello?
Hi, what's going on there? What's going on there? Hello? Hello?
The officers are immediately dispatched to the home, and the really sad thing here is Michael had literally tricked Daniel. So whilst Daniel's on the phone to the emergency services, Michael is pleading with him to open the door. He's saying that Robert's trying to kill him. He's asking his brother to protect him. Let me in. So Daniel opens the door because Daniel is a loving brother. And of course, that wasn't the case at all. Michael was just using this as a ruse to deceive his little brother. So the moment he gets in, Michael grabs the phone from Daniel, smashes it, and he turns to Robert and he says, "He's all yours." Just think about how cold that is. Daniel thought he was going to protect his brother. He let him in, feeling that he could save his life. And the way he's repaid is to literally have the very brother that he was trying to protect turn on him in the most horrific and horrendous of ways. Robert enters the study where Daniel is. Daniel's pleading, "Don't kill me. I love you." And he just stabs him in the neck. That was the struggle that the call dispatcher had heard. Daniel apparently made it into the living room. That's when, as he staggers out, bleeding from his neck, that he sees his mother, where she's lay dying. And he shouted, "Mummy." And that's just before Robert stabbed him in the back in so many ways, piercing his heart, killing him. He proceeded to stab his little brother over 20 times in the stomach, in the chest, in the head, and in the neck. And we have to remember that in crimes where there is an intimate connection, often we see overkill. We see a complete unnecessary rampage of the body, the brutality, the butchering, and certainly that's playing out, but it's hard to conceptualize that we're talking about a little boy being murdered by his big brother in this way. It's just horrific to envisage. Now, meanwhile, there are other siblings. We've got 10-year-old Christopher and we've got 4-year-old Victoria. They've just been woken by the screams. You can imagine, can't you, the horror coming to when you've been sleeping, when it's just been a normal evening, and then all of a sudden you're waking up into this horror. Now, Christopher was terrified, so he hides in the bathroom, and Victoria had actually hidden in her father's office, which was directly next door. And now the brothers have got time, so they turn their attention to them. Michael uses exactly the same trick that he'd used to get his other brother to open the door. So he begs Christopher to open the door. And again, this terrified younger sibling who clearly just has love in his heart obliges. When Christopher trustingly opens the door to protect Michael, essentially, Michael kicks it open and then he just stabs him in the neck. After that, Robert enters and he's just killed Daniel. And then he proceeds to stab Christopher 21 times whilst that little boy was screaming on the floor. Can you imagine listening to the screams of your innocent brother and your other innocent brother and your other innocent sister and your parents, and nothing is affecting your conscience. You just want to kill again. There is something so unusual, something so dark about that kind of mindset. It's so rare to hear it. They were consistently presented with the horror of their siblings dying in front of them by their hands, and nothing stops them. Christopher was wounded in his back, in his chest, in his head, in his neck. And then, of course, Robert decides that he's going to focus his attention on his little sister. That little girl, hiding, terrified in her dad's office. Robert stabbed her 23 times in her neck, her back, her chest, her face, her abdomen. And both the brother and the sister that I've just talked about, they both suffered absolutely extensive defensive wounds. They were fighting for their lives. It must have been absolutely terrifying for both of them to meet their end that way. The isolation they would have felt, the abandonment they would have felt in that moment. Now, officers have been called out. They arrive at 709 Magnolia Court, and the first thing that they see is there's just blood all over the porch. Bear in mind, Crystal's been dragged. They know this isn't any kind of trick. This isn't kids playing a big joke on law enforcement. This is real. They knock on the door, and they can actually hear this faint cry for help. At that moment in time, they just kick the door in, and all they are met with is this absolute scene of carnage. In fact, it would prove to be the area's worst criminal event ever. And those officers are walking into it. You can imagine the absolute trauma they experience, because these individuals take the job to protect and serve. They're not used to finding families literally executed, particularly in safe neighbourhoods. The house was described correctly, as you would imagine it to be, which is a bloodbath. Crystal's lying near the doorway. She's literally in a pool of her own blood. She'd suffered the most horrific injuries. She'd been stabbed multiple times. They knew that just by looking at her. Some of the stab wounds were so severe, her internal organs were literally protruding from her abdomen. She'd also suffered so many defensive wounds, this little girl. She tried to protect her family, but she'd also fought hard for her life. So she had defensive wounds to her arms, to her hands. And when the officers found her, she was so close to death. But somehow, that utter warrior, despite her injuries, despite the intense, immense blood loss, she survived. The officer wants to get her away from the scene because, of course, they don't know whether the perpetrators are still there, and obviously their intention is to kill her, so they want to make her safe. They carry her outside and the others start to search the house. Incredibly, they find a second survivor. One family member had managed to escape the violence. Officers found 23-month-old Autumn just asleep upstairs in a crib. Now, Robert and Michael down the line had claimed that the original plan was that they were going to kill Autumn. They were actually, in their warped, dark mindsets, planning to decapitate her with a hatchet. But thankfully, because of the utter carnage that had played out and because the killings hadn't gone as smoothly as they had hoped, they'd literally forgotten all about their younger sibling. So she, thank God, survived unscathed. And my God, at 23 months, we can only hope that she will never, ever have any type of memory or even attachment to this horrifying night and event. Now, during a search of the property, officers are stunned because, one, they're walking into a huge experience of family annihilation that will be so left field for them. But also, it's what they find inside. There are knives, there are blades, there's a hatchet. So they can see that this is not something that's been spur of the moment. But the big problem is they can't find the killers. They're nowhere to be seen. And the reason for that is they fled through the back door when the officers arrived. So they're hiding in the woods, which is at the rear of the property. The police are wise to wanting to catch them. They know how to, so they can appreciate that it's unlikely they've got very far. And they also have been informed, remember, by one of the siblings that actually they are the brothers in this case. So they probably know at this point that they're looking for younger people, at least young adults. So they get the police dog and they release the police dog to track them down. Now, during the attempt to escape, Michael was actually bitten on the shoulder by the dog. I mean, it is incredible, isn't it? You know, dogs are men's best friend, as they say. But at the end of the day, what we also know about these animals is they are strong beasts if they want to be. And when they're trained accurately and appropriately, they are incredibly powerful. And that dog managed to find Michael and managed to apprehend him, which is unbelievable. And it didn't take long, actually, for both of the brothers to be apprehended. They're both covered in dirt. They're both covered in blood, but of course, they're not covered in their own blood, just their entire families. Now, understandably, at this point, both Robert and Michael are arrested on suspicion of multiple murder. They are banged to rights, let's all be honest. There is no way that they can get away with this. And of course, we have a living witness, which is incredible, because Crystal has managed to be stabilised in hospital, so she's able to identify both of her older brothers as the attackers. And I think at this moment, I also just need to remind everyone that in hindsight, Daniel, that 12-year-old little boy, he is such a hero in this case. He lost his life. But how many lives did...
Legends, the greatest social casino experience has arrived at Legends.com. With thousands of the best free-to-play casino-style games, chances to earn millions of bonus coins and win real money. Legends is revolutionizing the Vegas experience wherever you are. If you love winning, then you'll love playing at Legends.com. Legends is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Play responsibly. Visit Legends.com for more information. Legends with a Z.com is legendary fun.
That little boy saved by having the wherewithal to actually call emergency services. He was brutally killed. Yes, but that kid died an absolute hero. Had he not called the officers to the scene, the brothers would definitely have killed Crystal, definitely have killed Autumn. And to be honest, they could have evaded custody for quite a while. They could have taken lots more lives whilst on the run. That little boy, he bravely made a call that essentially changed the potential history that would have evolved otherwise. Now, during the interrogation, Robert actually was really cooperative with the FBI. But one of the things that stood out, and it does stand out when you watch the interrogations, is that when you think about the chilling experience that I've just described, his conduct is so weird. It is so clearly a mismatch between what we would expect in this moment. He's really calm. He's incredibly collected. And the really scary thing is he seems to enjoy recounting the details. He even chuckles at times. He gives a full confession. He openly admits that he'd carried out the killing, said that he'd killed 3 out of the 5 people. He said that Michael had killed 2. He also went on later down the line to say that he underestimated just how hard it was to kill someone, that it proved a lot harder than he thought. And he also mentioned that there were elements of the killing that he didn't really enjoy, so he didn't like the sound of the knife blade striking the bone. But the one thing that was evidently missing from the confession was any remorse. He butchered almost his entire family, and he really doesn't show one iota of care. He also went on to discuss the fact that they had this big idea about the mass murder spree. And he also said that, you know, as far as the motivation is concerned, he believed that killing more than one person would make him godlike, an omnipotence prospect within the killing, a sense of aligning himself with a god, that he would make the decision where and when people died. He also told the detective that he really didn't think that killing was a bad thing, said that from a really early age, he'd always thought about doing it. And he also had this bizarre logic where he said, you know what? What I thought was, the more people I killed, well, it would mean statistically at some point I was going to kill somebody who wasn't contributing to our society. I am not trying to encourage people to kill themselves, by the way, before anybody decides to write that on the comments. Anybody who knows me knows my direct relationship with the horrors of suicide. But when this logic comes out and he's talking about the fact that in the end, if he killed somebody who might be bad for society, it would be worth it, you kind of think, well, why don't you just start with yourself? Because clearly that would save a lot of people's lives. Like, look in the mirror. You're the problem. If you've got this weird solution, maybe just start with you. But this is what he believed, that it would be a good thing if you managed to kill one person who was terrible, even if he killed several people who were wonderful, including his own siblings. Now, he was subsequently diagnosed with major depressive disorder with psychotic features and PTSD. I'm going to be honest with you. Personally, having worked with people with major depressive disorder and people with psychosis and people with PTSD, I have never come across somebody that would leverage going and murdering others because of it. So I do think that this is one of those retrospective kind of diagnoses that tries to fit reasons as to why a young person might act this way. And I'm sure that the isolation of not necessarily having a lot of friends could have played into the fact that this individual didn't feel as happy as he could have in his life. But come on, at the end of the day, people who are majorly depressed are at more risk of harming themselves, not of deciding that they ultimately want to execute innocent people. And also, he enjoyed it. Can we just all be real about this? This is not an individual who is traumatized or terrorized by his actions. This is an individual who thoroughly enjoyed them. The only PTSD I would imagine that he has is that he didn't get to carry out the plan in a better way for longer, personally. Maybe that's his trauma, because he missed out on actually becoming the visible, viable killer that he always believed he would be. Also, when it came down to Michael's interrogation, we have the same thing playing out. Really cool, really calm. And he was able to say, well, you know what, when I analysed what my brother was motivated by, basically he had a hatred of everyone and he believed that society was pointless. And on top of that, he wanted to, in parallel, become known. So that all collided and colluded to bring him to a position where this was the way to do it. And Michael, he said, well, really, all I wanted was my learner's permit. Not really sure how that works on a logic base. Why did you murder all these people? Well, all I wanted was my learner's permit. I don't know how you're actually bringing that in. There's some kind of connection. Just want my learner's permit. Isn't that to do with driving a car? It's my learner's permit. I want it. If I can have that, none of this would have happened. Makes no sense at all. No sense. But anyway, this is what he says. And he actually talks about planning to kill the family. He talked about becoming a big spree mass killer. And he also talked about wanting to become famous. So again, there's like a disjunct between what he's saying and what's actually played out. One of the things that is clear, though, he gave very similar account to that account that Robert gave.
We're talking about the ammunition being delivered. Making plans. Tell me more about making plans and what you guys talked about.
Making plans, we all plotted every night, and I started to realize we were actually going to do this thing on the second night, and so I started getting ready.
When was that? The second night, what do you mean?
July 1st.
Okay.
Because we started June 30th.
That's when you started making the plan?
Yeah, that's when we found out we could buy guns legally.
I see. Did you guys draw, make drawings or write things down? Or
I think he had a journal. Basically, I think his ideas down. I think it's under his bed.
Under his bed. Is it like a, like a journal, like a notepad, or like
yeah,
a book?
It's like a blank book.
Okay.
A black book. I think it's like a little case.
So you think he wrote stuff in there?
Yeah, I think he was planning it.
So then the second day, you said that's when you realized that it might actually happen.
Yeah.
What made you realize that?
How serious he was. I mean, he was going through, he started planning on taking all of his money out of his bank and throwing away stuff, throwing away all this stuff, so you know.
Why did he want to do it?
Kill people?
Yeah.
Well, mainly two reasons, I think. It's because he just, like, says he hates everyone. He thinks society is pointless, and so he wanted to kill people.
Yeah,
and also he wanted to, like, beat the kill, like, amount of other famous people like Columbine and James Egan Holmes.
Okay. Did you kind of feel that way, too, like, when you guys were talking earlier, like...
Yeah.
Do you have a problem with society, too, you think?
No, I just...
Or you were just more like the number of people getting killed was kind of interesting and exciting?
Yeah.
Okay. So, because you mentioned a couple names of... Are those, like, serial killers or something?
What, like Columbine?
Yeah.
Columbine and James Egan Holmes. James Egan Holmes is a guy that shot at the theater.
In Colorado?
Yeah, he killed 12 and...
Wow. How many were killed in Columbine?
Columbine, I don't know, like 15.
Okay.
I think.
So did you guys have a goal? Did you have a number?
I think he wanted to kill like 50.
Okay.
I have a goal.
So as the planning goes, tell me what plans you started making and coming up with.
Well, originally, I think kind of stayed steady. Throughout the month is so we want to kill everyone at the house first.
Okay.
And then wait for all the packages to show up over the weekend. Then we take the economy to have our state with the guns and start rampaging.
Did you know where you were going to drive to?
Towards Washington.
Washington State or D.C.?
Washington State.
So he did, like his brother say, that they had intended to kill the 5 family members. And he also said that he personally stabbed 10-year-old Christopher and that he also personally stabbed his mother. He also described how he'd tricked Daniel into opening the door.
And Daniel was in his room, which is down the hall. And I was like,
how old's Daniel?
I think he's 12.
Okay.
And I was like, let me in, and he let me in. They were sitting there on the phone with the police. I grabbed the phone, which is my phone, got my phone. And then I ran into the kitchen and I smashed the underground.
So, which was your phone?
Yeah, it was my phone.
Now you don't have a cell phone anymore.
No, I don't.
And was also very much in line with what we've talked about so far when it came down to describing what went wrong, because he said, all the original plans, they'd just gone awry. Because as I said earlier on, people are unpredictable and killing is nowhere near as easy as people believe.
Because you had said you had the plans, like, you're supposed to kill this person, he's supposed to kill this person. Were you supposed to kill Christopher? Was he your responsibility?
No.
It just worked out that way?
When Daniel was supposed to be his responsibility. I was only supposed to kill Dad.
But he had already basically done that.
Yeah.
So now you're left standing there. So were you trying to kill Christopher when you stabbed him in the neck? Were you just gonna...
I purposely missed the middle of the neck. I think I might have even hit him in the shoulder. I certainly didn't do it hard, but...
Now, during this interview, one of the things that he does kind of allude to is that he'd actually acted under duress. So he'd said that he joined in the killings because Robert was going to do it anyway, and basically Robert had potentially threatened to kill him if he didn't join in. Now, we can unpack that, and there are lots of different levels to it. So on one, we can take it literally and see that Robert was somebody who had the capacity and capability to kill all of his family. He was quite happy to, he wanted to, and that meant that potentially he would have killed his other brother, who instead felt afraid of him and thought, you know what, better to be on Robert's side than to be a victim of Robert's behaviour. But how many opportunities do you have in life where somebody says something that you know is just completely incongruent with reality and with morality? You have choices that you can make. Hey, Mum, Robert's decided he wants to kill us all. He's ordered guns and ammunition. And after he's murdering all of us, he's going to, get on the road and just go and kill everybody else. Maybe we need to deal with his behaviour. Boys will be boys. I don't think at that point she would have said that. Genuinely, I think that if she had been told by her son, he is motivated, he is prepared, he is prepped, he is planned, you're going to be like, right, this is dangerous. We need to speak to law enforcement, for example. So he makes an active choice to deny the right of his family to life to protect himself. So even if we go down that road and route where we say, okay, he was scared, he thought his brother might harm him, he would still be electing his own survival over anybody else's, which is highly egocentric and makes me really question the reality of that motivation and of the threat that he genuinely felt with Robert. Now it comes to the court case. We get to 2016. So Robert, well, he pleads guilty to 5 counts of first degree murder, also 1 count of assault and battery with intent to kill, because obviously Crystal survives. Now, because he took that plea and he actually agreed to go guilty, he avoided the death sentence because that was going to be on the table. So the subsequent reality of that trial is that he is sentenced to life without parole. Of course, that was always going to be the case. You absolutely cannot trust to rehabilitate this kind of killer. Now, Michael is different. So he actually pleads not guilty to the murder charges against him, which seems absolutely bizarre. Genuinely, how does Michael ever expect that he's going to get away with this? But he does. Maybe he had some kind of maverick defense who believed that they could just turn it on its head, confuse the jury, and create a level of reasonable doubt, which is obviously what they're going to try to do. Now, during Michael's trial, this is in April 2018, so not too long ago, his older brother Robert actually testifies for the defense. So bear in mind what he told the police during the interviews, which is that he killed 3 and his brother had killed 2. Yeah, he starts to change it. Now he says, no, it didn't really happen. I acted alone. Michael did absolutely nothing wrong. Even went on to say that he didn't actually see Michael kill anybody. He didn't even see Michael hold a knife, and that he'd also carried out all of the murders. And that could be a story that would work and run, had it not been for all the evidence, you know? Oh, he wasn't involved. I think you'll find that Crystal genuinely was there and kind of saw all this. Yes, but he was not involved. I think you'll find that we have the operator on the phone to dispatch, talking to your brother and hearing all of that horrendous. Yes, but he was not involved. I think you literally will have finger marks all over the weapons that were used. I'm just going to keep saying it. He wasn't involved. I think you want to be more notorious and you don't like the fact that you're only getting to be known for 3 kills. Because at the end of the day, a lot of people have done those horrible things and you want it to be maybe that you killed more and that you were the planner and you were the executor. Okay, that does sound like you're in my mindset, but all I'm going to say is my brother did absolutely nothing wrong. Anyway, it's ludicrous. Bear in mind, during the actual police interview, Michael had admitted to stabbing his younger brother and mother. They literally had it on tape. It's just blindsiding when individuals think that somehow, in spite of the fact that their own words condemn them, it's all going to be okay because somebody's going to take responsibility for the killings and everyone's going to be like, oh, well, we won't mind about the reality and all the evidence and your actual words. We'll just go with it. Also, he's got his mother's blood all over his clothes. There's blood on one of the murder weapons because one of the things that he did is he cut his own finger whilst he was actually stabbing his little brother, Christopher. So he's banged to rights every single day of the week, but he obviously thought that maybe he could pull over the wool over the eyes of the individuals who were in the jury. So we get to August 2018 and no one is surprised at all, maybe, apart from Michael and Robert, who obviously think that there's some kind of Svengali of changing reality. And Michael's found guilty of 5 counts of first degree murder and 1 count of assault and battery with intent to kill. So he gets sentenced to 5 consecutive life sentences with the chance of parole. Which I don't really understand, because I think that the kind of killing that we're talking about is just so malevolent and macabre that we probably can't trust this individual to be safe, no matter how they seem to reform inside. That noted, I guess his age is a contributor, and I get that potentially some people felt that he was highly influenced by his older brother. Either way, I think we're dealing with an incredibly dangerous human being, particularly in the fact that he showed no remorse. And on top of that, he's an individual who was quite happy with how things played out. And you can see that in the interviews themselves. Now, he's currently incarcerated in the Lexington Correctional Center in Oklahoma. And he's going to get to know that place very, very well for the rest of his days, most likely. Now, in 2017, whilst incarcerated at the Joseph Harp Correctional Center in Oklahoma, Robert Bevar actually tried to kill himself. He tried to hang himself with a bedsheet, and that doesn't end some of his, shall we say, challenging and problematic behavior, because 2 years later, in July 2019, he attempted to attack two prison staff with an 8-inch long shank. For those of you in countries that don't know what a shank is, it's basically a weapon that people kind of make out of certain things in prison. Often it can be a very dangerous implement that they've created themselves. It works kind of like a knife. And fortunately, as he approaches one of the officers, the other's able to get him in a bear hug and restrains him. But he was obviously intending to kill again. Now, he pleads guilty at this point to assault and battery and also possessing a weapon. And they actually give him another 3 further life sentences. So at the end of the day, he's definitely never going to see.
Your night in just got legendary. Get ready to chase the rush, spin, win, and redeem instantly straight to your bank account at legendswithaz.com. With free-to-play slots, blackjack, keno, roulette, and more, experience all the thrills of Vegas without leaving your couch. Legends has it all.
Legends is a free-to-play social casino. Okay. Void where prohibited. Must be 18 plus. Play responsibly. Visit legends.com for full details.
Get in the game now and score a 50% bonus on your first purchase only at legendswithaz.com.
The light of day, but it's kind of not the most positive reality when we consider his mindset as far as a punishment is concerned, because Robert doesn't see it as a punishment. He doesn't see prison as a punishment at all. And he actually says, when I was younger, all I wanted was one room that I could do everything in and live in all the time. And now I have it. So it's actually really easy for me in prison. I just spend a lot of time in my head. And so I'm not really worried about thinking of this as a punishment. I would have considered the death penalty as punishment. I don't really consider this as punishment. I consider this as a safety precaution because I'm not a functioning member of society. So I'm okay with it, though I try not to think about it too much. So for him, it isn't actually something that deeply concerns him on a psychological level. What I would say is, even though that kind of sticks in my throat, because you think this person needs to realize the error of their ways, this person needs to acknowledge the horror, take accountability and responsibility for the awful things that they've played out. To some degree, you can imagine that as he goes through the motions of growing older and older and older, and the thing about growing older is, even when it comes down to serious violent offenders, often there is a point of reflection. Some people will never have it because they'll be so psychopathic, it's off the chart, that they really just don't have the conscience, empathy, guilt, or anxiety even that's fed into that situation and state to really reflect on their actions. But many, as they get older, start to consider their own mortality and consider the potential realities consequentially in a different dimension and state because of the actions they've carried out. And so it might be as he gets older and as those milestones pass, you're never going to be a father, you're never going to get married, you're never going to own your own home, you're never going to have a career. That can suddenly change from a sense of, well, this is all right, I've got my one room, life's fine, to grief, loss, pain. And I hope he experiences and endures that, because my God, he deserves to. When you think about this case, it is shocking. You know, whilst the brothers were absolutely resentful of the parents, the same cannot be said of their siblings. They did nothing wrong at all. Even if they were blameful towards their parents because they thought that they were too hard with them, that they made them live lives that they would not necessarily have chosen themselves, that they were isolated and alienated from their peers. The point is, their siblings were absolutely lovely. They did nothing to alert any negativity towards themselves. It's as if these brothers just saw the annihilation of the family as the first necessary step to becoming famous serial killers. That's clear in the way that they planned and prepped this. And the way that they actually killed the family. Wow, just overkill, complete blitz. And that's indicative of intimate connection and rage on the part of the perpetrators. You know, the victims must have suffered absolutely horrendously, mentally, physically. And of course, we can look at Robert being diagnosed with a mental illness after his arrest. you know, we could say, well, maybe that potentially affected his judgment a little bit. But with Michael, there was literally no such diagnosis. In fact, his IQ, we could say, could have been a little bit problematic because it was established to be 83 and the normal is between 85 and 115. And actually, if it was under 70, which is not too far away from what he is, he would have been considered mentally disabled. And when they talked to him, yes, his verbal skills were actually assessed to be decent. They were okay, but his thinking skills were very poor. So arguably, we could say with him, he doesn't have the level of conscience of his brother, and he was maybe more easily led by his older brother. But even if I'm to say that, it just sticks in my throat because the actions, just like Robert's actions, they just seem too cold, too calculated. I'm just not in that area where I believe this is about an older sibling terrifying or leading a younger sibling. I think they both got what they wanted. Now, whilst Robert's never going to be set free, of course, he's got all of those life sentences and it's without parole. Michael could be. Michael could be released. And it's one of those scenarios that when you kind of play it out in your head, you're like, could someday, capable of such absolute brutality, the cold, calculating execution, the punishing of the family members that did not deserve any of it, and to do it without any real remorse or accountability, could this be a person that you would ever want living next door to you? Because that's what we're talking about when we release people. We're talking about the fact that they could become your neighbour, somebody capable of such depths and depravity. Let's just hope that neither of those individuals ever get to experience the freedom that at some point both will crave. Let's hope that Michael never gets to experience the fresh air rustling through his hair on his release date. Let's just hope that both of those leave prison in a box, because as far as I am concerned, they have both given up their rights to ever lead a life other than one which involves a very heavy steel door and very large locks and keys for the rest of their days. I hope if you've heard this case before, that I've at least given you some more information or alerted you to other potential ideas about why this played out. And also, I would love to know the thoughts that you have on this case. Like I said, it is truly disconcerting when you see these individuals interviewed. They are so devoid of emotion. Crystal, what a hero. Let's hope that her little sister never remembers any of this. And let's hope that the lives that they get to live are lives of thriving, are lives of freedom, are lives of success. They had a really difficult start, essentially, to their worlds. Let's hope that they now have the supportive and protective mechanisms where they can truly be free to enjoy a life that they absolutely 100% deserve. And also let's remember that little boy who made all of this possible, who made that call, who essentially lost his own life in the most diabolical of ways, but who had the bravery and warrior strength that very few of us could ever relate to, and hopefully very few of us will ever need to. That's it for Bang to Rights today. Join me for the next episode. See you then. Be safe.
Your night in just got legendary. Get ready to chase the rush, spin, win, and redeem instantly straight to your bank account at legendswithaz.com. With free-to-play slots, blackjack, keno, roulette, and more, experience all the thrills of Vegas without leaving your couch. Legends has it all.
Legends is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Must be 18 plus. Play responsibly. Visit legends.com for full details.
Get in the game now and score a 50% bonus on your first purchase only at legendswithaz.com.